You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
Would you like to polish your skills when it comes to communicating on the spur of the moment? Do you wish you could be better prepared to handle those unexpected situations in life when you're asked an uncomfortable question or have to deliver some unrehearsed comments?
Well, our guest on this episode can definitely help you. She is Jen Brown, founder of The Engaging Educator and author of the book, Think on Your Feet. Tips and tricks to improve your impromptu communication skills on the job. Jen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Super pumped to be here.
And how did you become an expert at impromptu communication?
Well, I was an actor when I was younger. I went to undergrad actually for theater and dance, and I loved it until I hated it. So, isn't that what we all do?
Oh, it's of like course.
And I was an actor in Chicago and I loved it. And then I moved to New York, and New York is very, very different. So I decided to get a super sensible degree in art history after that.
Of course.
And that super sensible degree in art history, of course, led me to museums. Again, another really like easy to pay your bills kind of job.
Right.
Not in the least. So I actually got called out a lot for helping out people at the museum be able to be flexible. And I was like, this isn't something I was born with. This is everything that I learned in improv, except y'all are afraid of improv. So calling it impromptu speaking was so much easier. So that's the very condensed version of how I got where I am, because I've been doing improv for over half my life now. I just turned 37 this past year, and I've been doing it or teaching it since I was 15.
And you also became an accidental entrepreneur. And so you combined those skills to be where you are today. So can you explain a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I didn't think I was going to start a business. I thought I was going to be this funky museum woman that taught improv on the side. And it turns out that we're all really bad at this and listening and communicating. And like I was thinking earlier and saying earlier, that I feel like if everyone took a communication skills class, they would avoid some breakups or some issues with their family, or maybe Thanksgiving would be a lot easier. But it turns out a lot of people need those skills. So I just decided to run more classes. And until it got to a point where I was literally like answering emails at 2 a.m. for the business side and the side hustle, hoping that no one looked at my timestamp. And I was teaching at a museum during the day. So I just, about 4 years ago, I think officially, because I've been running the business for 7 and did it part-time for 3. And 4 years ago, I actually decided, you know what, I'm either going to do this or I'm not going to do this anymore, because I cannot stay up until 2 a.m. and write emails anymore. Mm-hmm. So now I'm just staying up until 2 a.m. with other things. Writing more emails.
And you feel that improv is a lifestyle that needs to be embraced. Tell us more about why you feel that way.
So improv at its core is just listening and responding. That's it. So most people see it or think it and they're like, oh, it's Whose Line Is It Anyways? Oh, it's stand up. Oh, it's being funny. And it's like, no, it wouldn't exist without listening and responding. And that's the part I think that we really stumble over in life. We think of our answer before the person's done asking the question, or we're ready to come in with our witty, quote unquote, in our heads response. And really, it's just funny to us. So I think if we all spent a lot more time living this whole, I'm going to be in the moment, I'm going to listen, I'm going to respond to what's actually happening around me, not what I think what's happening around me, not what I'm interpreting because of my bad day around me, but like what's actually there, then I think we would all pay a lot better attention to one another and actually have a smoother existence.
I know that's something I would want to do, but I'm one of these people that's definitely guilty of having autopilot on and telling the woman who's taking my ticket at the airport that I hope she has a good flight, you know, after she tells me to. I feel like that's something we all do. How do we stop doing that?
So that's me too. If I'm not making the conscious choice. And I think that's where we kind of don't give ourselves enough grace. We think, oh, I'm going to be present. I'm going to do this. I'm going to listen. And then when we slide back into autopilot, we beat ourselves up. When in reality, if you think about when you're actually listening to someone, you make a conscious choice to listen. You say, I'm not going to think about what I'm doing later. I'm not going to think about the email stacking up in my box or checking the mail or picking up my spouse or my kids or my partner. I'm going to focus on what this person's saying. And that's the same thing with improv. It's exhausting to be present. It's so tiring. So I think starting little bits at a time, like with one conversation. Okay, you know what? I'm actually going to pay attention and not think about all the other things that I have to do today. And those little, like even little stones in water still make ripples. So in that sense, giving yourself that grace and that permission to do it sometimes and mess up, quote unquote, other times is the only way that you're going to start doing it more. And no one's perfect. So you're always going to slide into autopilot at times because that our brains just get tired.
So active listening helps us better think on our feet.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Because if you think about it, when you're truly paying attention to what's happening around you and not thinking of 20 steps forward or 10 steps back, you're going to be able to respond with what's in front of you because all of that other garbage isn't getting in the way. But if you're thinking about like, oh, okay, later I'm going to do this and this is going to happen, or man, I had so much work to do today, and you're not actively paying attention to what's happening around you, you're going to miss something. And then you're going to feel like you're catching up. So if you're worried and carrying all this baggage, the thinking on your feet is going to be really difficult. If you're just focused in the moment, then you just have that to pay attention to and to busy your brain with.
Why is it that some people feel really energized when the pressure is on and when they have to think on their feet, whereas others feel so much anxiety? And how can we make it so that we feel empowered when we need to really go to that place where we have to get out of our comfort zone?
I really think that a lot of that is experiential. The people that get jazzed when they are thinking on their feet and have that moment, that kind of pressure, flight or fright, flight sort of moment going on, have been negative. So the scale is tipped so far to negative. And when someone enjoys it, chances are they've had a moment where it's like, oh, that was amazing. I can't believe I didn't fully prepare. I didn't overthink it. And I really believe that when you start to enjoy being present in the moment is when you actually give yourself a chance to do it more often. Because then you see, oh, if it doesn't work, I failed. Life doesn't end. You don't lose your job. You don't lose your relationship. You've given yourself this buffer of, okay, well, life goes on if I make a mistake. But if you just do it once and it's terrible, then of course that's all you're going to think about it. The folks that tell me, oh, I'm so bad at public speaking, I'm like, well, how often do you public speak? Well, there was this one time a couple of years ago. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you have a very small data metric you're working with.
Right, right.
So, I mean, that's why I tell people just to put yourself out there, as even if putting yourself out there is like talking to one other person that you may or may not know at a networking event. Like, that's going to look different for me, for you, for everyone, what putting yourself out there is. And if you just do it a little more than you're used to, or at least one extra time a week or a day, then you're going to give yourself that grace to see that it isn't as scary as you thought, and the world doesn't end if you make a mistake.
How much of a role does the way we feel about our appearance play in how good we are at impromptu communication? And I'm saying this, I guess, because of personal experience, because I think if I feel I'm looking good, then I feel stronger about whatever message I'm trying to get across.
So I tell people all the time, there's four big factors that tie into how you're communicating. There's who you are, where you are, what you want, and how you feel. And if one of those is a little off or not as strong as it needs to be, then your conversation is going to be kind of wonky, kind of awkward, kind of weird. And that really ties into it, because how you feel is not just about the situation and who you're talking to. It's how you feel about yourself. So if you're thinking, oh my goodness, I don't look my best today. I have sweats on. I have my hair up. Like, I went to therapy today and I had my hair like at the top of my head in a knot. And my therapist was like, oh, you look different. And I was like, I didn't wash my hair. And he was like, no, it looks good. And I was like, okay, this is weird.
Right.
Because of that, I came across as very awkward because I was like, oh my God, is she asking a question about my hair because it's on the top of my head and not done today because I'm running around or what? So I think that really ties into it. Because if you're not feeling good about yourself, that means you're probably overthinking it, or at least in the back of your head, everyone worries far less about someone else as they do themselves. Like, yeah. We're our own worst enemies.
You talk about the importance of celebrating our accomplishments, but I feel like anytime I try and mention something I've done, I feel like I'm bragging, or on the opposite side, I feel like sometimes I'm coming off almost self-deprecating. So how can we do this in the right way?
I think getting comfortable, and I'm laughing because I was literally talking to a friend today who was celebrating a promotion that she got. It's like huge promotion, super excited about it. And then she immediately flipped it, like said her thing. I was ready to bask with her. I was super pumped about it. And then she's like, so your book. And I was like, no. Like, we're not getting out of this easy.
Right.
And I think one of the best things that we can do is either find that one cheerleader, that one person, even if it's just talking about it online. Like, one of the reasons why I actually like Twitter and social media is people are always going to think that you're too much or not enough. But if you start celebrating and just saying things that you're proud of or excited about to someone, even if it's yelling it into the internet, then the more you do it, the more comfortable it's going to be. And I think keeping in mind that you are always going to be too much for someone. Someone's always going to say, oh, well, I wish that I got it, or why did they get it? Or they're bragging, or they're being too self-centered. This is it's projection on their side. And when it comes to that self-deprecation, when we're kind of like tying in an insult or insulting ourselves when we're talking about something that we're really excited about, like asking yourself why you're doing that is a really good place to start. Not fixing it immediately because you're not broken. Just going like, well, why am I playing it off? Am I feeling uncomfortable about it? Am I feeling like this person I'm talking to is going to think it's lame or silly or goofy or weird? And kind of almost therapying yourself in that way, because we say things however we want to say them because of whatever's going on in our head. So that self-deprecation, a lot of times people are trying to lessen their accomplishment because they're worried what that other person's going to think. So if you're thinking about that, like, well, then don't say it. Don't say the accomplishment if you're that worried around that person. Or say it, and who cares? Because you're still excited about it, and nothing can change that.
You have a great chapter in the book called Networking and Small Talk. So I'm wondering if you could share with us some of your best advice on things like brainstorming topics and possible questions before an important event where you're going to have to make small talk.
Absolutely. I think one of the best pieces of advice that people forget all the time is the power, again, of listening and asking someone about themselves. So often I'm working with people because a lot of the students that we have, a lot of the people we're training, they're introverted. They feel socially awkward. They describe themselves as not good at networking. And I always ask why they think that. And their response is always this, well, it just doesn't feel natural to talk about myself, or this, that, and the other. And I was like, well, ask that person about themselves and get them talking and ask questions that you're truly curious about. So when you're getting someone talking, and I mentioned this in the chapter, when you're getting them talking about themselves and you're actively listening to that, there's a Harvard study from 2012 that talks about how the areas of our brain that are associated with pleasure, so like good food, that all starts lighting up. So that person is getting good vibes here, just being around you, because you are having them talk about themselves and you are actively listening to that. So you're nodding, you're smiling, you're asking questions. That person is going to remember how they felt around you more than what you talked about. We all do that. We remember how we felt versus the details. So get someone else to start talking, ask questions that you're truly curious about. And then when you think about brainstorming topics, again, Like, don't brainstorm something that you know nothing about, that you care nothing about, because that's going to show. You can start brainstorming things that you actually are curious about, that you're interested, that you know about. And then when in doubt, always refer to the setting. So if you're in a networking situation and there's really great music playing or really good food or really fun plants, if you start referring to that stuff and connecting with it, chances are that person you're talking to is also feeling slightly awkward because we're not alone in this. You can start that conversation going slowly and then start digging in to some more topics that naturally come up just by paying attention. In improv, we call them gifts that you're listening for. So you're listening for those little bite-sized bits of information. So if someone's like, wow, it's really busy in here tonight. I have never been here. I thought it was only open during the day. And then you can say, oh, well, do you go a lot of places during the day? Like, you go to more networking events during the day than at night? Or what kind of places do you like to go to? Because you're listening for these bite-sized bits of information that push the conversation forward.
A really uncomfortable situation that I think a lot of us have been in a networking situation is if somebody, for example, refers to a book and says, oh, of course you're familiar with fill in the blank. And we're like, oh, yeah, of course. And we're not. And that just gets to be really uncomfortable. And you say that admitting that you don't know something is confident. How is that? And how can we get ourselves out of that really uncomfortable situation if, say, for example, it comes to bite us in the butt 5 minutes later and they ask us a question about that book?
Yeah.
And that's why you have to be honest, because if you can only smile and nod blankly for so long, like, right? You know, when people are doing that, you see their eyes glaze over, you see them be like, oh, yeah. And then some people will purposefully ask weird, wonky questions that have nothing to do when they recognize it. Like, I actually know business people like this that will say, oh, you're familiar with X? And the person clearly has no idea, but they say yes anyways. Mm-hmm. And that business person then asks, like, oh, well, how about give you a detail that never happened in X? Mm-hmm. And just to play with that person. And the thing is, we're humans. By saying, no, I'm not familiar with it, can you tell me about it? Look what you've done. You've turned the conversation. You've let that person start talking. You're giving them that moment to inform you about it. And by admitting you don't know confidently, by saying, you know what, I don't know that. That sounds really interesting. Or what makes you bring that up? Tell me about it. Conversations that come from curiosity are some of the best ones, because then you're both genuinely interested. So I think that to avoid that bite you in the butt moment of lying about something, that transparency of just being yourself and being honest with both you and the person you're talking to, that's a really hard thing for a lot of people to do. So by doing it, you're exhibiting confidence because you're comfortable enough with yourself to say, I don't know.
What's your advice for thinking on your feet if you're involved in a conversation with people who clearly share differing political views from yours?
I think the best is using yes and. It's the idea of, like, affirming the reality, not just agreeing with people. That's the biggest misconception with this improv, like, buzzword that you see Amy Poehler's book with yes, please. You hear about Tina Fey talking about yes and bossy pants. And it's the idea of saying yes to the reality. So you're saying, yes, you believe this view on politics, and adding your opinion, and I feel differently. Let's talk about nachos or more why you think about this. Because I do talk about that as well. It's like, don't, you can't unring a bell. So if you start digging in the conversation and being like, yes, you think this about politics, and I think this, let's talk about it. That person's probably going to want to talk about it. The moment you say the word but, though, the word B-U-T, you're adding this element of conflict. So by saying, yes, you feel this way, but I feel this way, you've elevated your opinion and your view over that other person. By using the word and, you're equalizing it. So those words that trigger conflict, that trigger arguments, that trigger this opinion is better or more worthwhile, if you avoid those words and just stick with words that equalize, like and, then you're going to have a better conversation, a discussion, versus disrespect that often comes up with like big hot issues like politics and nachos, of course.
I love how you talk about imposter syndrome in the book. And this is something that I've actually talked to a lot of friends about who feel like they have this. What is the cure for it?
If you find out, can you tell me? So it's that idea that you're a fraud and you'll be discovered. There's no concrete evidence of this. So even my own life, writing this book even, I came about it in the strangest way because my editor actually emailed me through my contact form on my website. And I saw it and I was like, what is this spam? Like, who wants you to write a book? Like, what is this nonsense? It came through my info form. And I was like, who would read a book by me? Like, what is this? And it's that feeling that the entire time, just as an example, when I was writing the first draft, I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. No one's going to want to read this. Blah, 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 blah. I don't know anything. And truth be told, I've been teaching for 7 years. We've had over 50,000 students. I know a lot and I can help a lot. So it's that feeling. It's that feeling that you're going to get discovered, that you are a fraud, that you shouldn't be there. And what I've found works best with both myself and our clients is allowing yourself, again, the grace to feel it sometimes and to start looking for concrete evidence that that isn't the case. So exactly what you heard me do, like, you know what? No, I've run a business for 7 years that does this. We've taught over 50,000 students. We have multiple locations. I'm not an imposter in this moment. And I find that also not speaking in absolutes is really helpful, at least for me and some of the people that we coach. So in the sense of like, you know, everything, you know, a lot, you don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And giving yourself that distinction of, I know a lot, because you probably do know a lot. And I'm skilled at this. You probably are skilled at this. Do you know everything? Are you the best ever? Probably not, because you always should be learning and growing. So taking that kind of mentality towards it, as opposed to I'm a fraud or I'm an expert, I think is a little softer on our psyches and a little better on our self-worth.
I'm wondering also about being in situations where, for example, you have to ask for a raise or you have to ask for something that doesn't come naturally to you.
Do your homework. 100 times over, do your homework in advance. I have the funniest client that I love her dearly, and she had been at her job for years and had never asked for a raise, never talked about it. And we working on it leading up to it, we're like, okay, let's write a resume of what the job was when you came in and what the job was when you left. Let's really make this case. Let's write everything down. Let's say really solid, concrete things that you accomplished. So that prep is so important when you're in the moment, because then you have something to come from as opposed to pulling it out of the air. So again, you're like doing all of this back work only to prepare for being in the moment. And when she actually got in the moment and asked for the raise, she didn't need any of it because her boss was like, oh, sure, you've been here a while and you've done good work. But what if the boss needed something? What if they were like, oh, I'm not sure? You could pull out this information or say this information that you've prepared. It looks very, oh, I'm ready for this moment that may or may not come up because you prepped for it and planned for it. And I think that really ties in again with everything that we've been talking about when it comes to like imposter syndrome and moving forward, like negotiation and working on a raise and asking for a promotion. The worst thing someone's going to say is no. Mm-hmm. The absolute worst thing that they're going to say. They're not going to be like, nope, you asked, you're fired. Unless you're
right.
Say, like, unless you're giving an ultimatum. But if you ask and they're like, not now, maybe later, let's talk about it, then you know where you stand, as opposed to having this question mark, again, back to the who you are, where you are, what you want, and how you feel. You don't miss that then. You know who you are. You know what you actually want. You might not know what they want from you to get to a raise. And a lot of times it's that hump of asking that's the scariest part. It's not even in the moment. It's not even the conversation that happens after you've done the ask. It's that initial, just let me ask the question, or let me even entertain this idea with someone. So it's taking the initiative to go for it. And again, be okay if it doesn't work out right away. and do your homework before you get there.
How important do you think things like eye contact and having an animated voice are when you're trying to ask for a raise or if you're in an important meeting? Does that make people feel more confident in you and make them want to give you something that you want?
So something that I said in the beginning of the book that I will say now is that we all communicate very differently. And some things work really, really well for one person and not so well for another. There are some skills that increase someone's belief and confidence in their leadership and make you look charismatic. And they're called charismatic leadership techniques. And things like having an animated voice, making eye contact, having gestures, telling stories. Like, these are things that people see in leaders and other people. And they're like, wow, that person is just so confident. And I believe in that person. I want to follow that person. And the thing is, like, that might work for what, like, storytelling might be really great for person A over here, and eye contact and gestures and animated voice might be really good for person B. But for some reason, one can't tell a story well and the other can't use animated voice or gestures. So I think if knowing all of them, like, I bring up a lot of examples, those are just a few of them, that you can try on for size and see how you like mm-hmm. and see what fits you as a person. Mm-hmm. Because if you put all of these on at once, then you're not going to be yourself. Like, when I'm talking right now, I'm super animated, like my hands are moving around. That's the kind of person I am. I tell people, and in workshops, I see people emulating my gestures sometimes or trying to use my same like tone of voice. And I'm like, no, full stop. Like, you have to find what works for you. You can't just be me because you think I'm right, because I'm not. I'm right for me. You need to find out what's right for you. So in that sense, if you are working and you haven't tried changing your cadence around, moving your voice around, if you haven't tried making gestures, if you're like stuck with your hands in your lap or at your side, again, there's no harm in trying it. Even if it's in a safe place, in your room, in the bathroom beforehand, in your office when nobody's there, and seeing what feels right. Because you're probably going to be surprised that something you've never done before actually makes you feel really confident. And again, if you feel confident, if that leadership technique works on you, then that's better than anything, because we get the energy we put out.
In terms of thinking on your feet, what suggestions do you have for covering up if you've forgotten a person's name or if you've misspoken, you know, if you've somehow screwed up in a conversation?
Again, transparency. So if it's something major, being transparent, being like, hey, you know what? I misspoke. Let me rephrase this. I think you can go back to it. Otherwise, a lot of times we are our worst critic, we're our worst enemy. So thinking that someone heard you say the wrong word or use the wrong verb or do something that's grammatically incorrect, those people that are listening to you aren't listening well enough to notice, one. And two, they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Right.
When we forget someone's name, though, just ask them. Like, I'm full out. I am terrible with names. I will remember what we talked about. I will remember a story you told me. I will remember probably what you were wearing, and I will forget your name every single time, every
right.
time. And I'm very honest about it. I'm like, you know what? I'm the worst with names. I remember you had this really great story about this plant or this door or whatever we were talking about. Can you remind me of your name?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll say it. And it's so much better than faking it. It's so much better than pretending you know someone's name.
And Jen, as you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. So we always ask our guests at the end of the show, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? So in your case, what do you wish that someone had told you about communication that they hadn't and that you wish they had because it would have saved you from some very awkward moments?
Nobody told me that silences were okay.
Ooh.
And I think that's one of the things that I still struggle with sometimes is just being, and I give that advice a lot, that take comfort in silence. And I think as a former people pleaser, as a facilitator, as a business person, I now use silences in a very different way than I did when I was younger. And I wish I would have found the power in a silence and just letting the air sit. Just letting people think, and just letting something hang there for a moment versus jumping in to fill it with noise.
And Jen, how can people connect with you on social media and the internet?
JenBrown.co. And that actually links to my companies, my books, my social media, all that good stuff. And I'm really active on Twitter, not so active on Facebook because I'm not a fan, but I'm also on Instagram.
All right. Well, we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Our thanks to Jen Brown, whose book is called Think on Your Feet: Tips and Tricks to Improve Your Impromptu Communication Skills on the Job. And again, you can find out more about her work at jenbrown.co. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.